May it please the court. There are times when this court, as a co-equal branch of government, must exercise its constitutional power to take a look at acts of the Missouri legislature and determine whether those acts violate provisions of first our state constitution or the federal constitution. In 2005, the legislature imposed a contributory negligence scheme in a workers' compensation system which since 1926 eliminated contributory fault as a defense. It was in effect a no-fault compensation system. When the legislature reimposed contributory negligence, and I want to emphasize contributory, not comparative, they so eviscerated that system of compensation that claimants were effectively denied access to any remedy at all. The same statute replaced neutral, independent decision makers with a system of review that in effect makes the decision makers in this system look over their shoulder because they're getting reviewed for their jobs, which has a chilling effect on judicial independence and places the whole system in question.
Now, in light of the Edwards case, we recently had handed down, which was a case where the legislature said you could sue a member of a commission if they committed gross negligence, where it was a situation with an executive function of licensing. This is different. This is where the legislature created judges who were going to deal with what was traditionally common law, an action for damages. And the legislature always creates our kind of judges, judicial branch judges, yet they can't interfere with the independence of that judge's judgment. How can they now say, if they've created these judges who are supposed to be independent and fair-minded, how can they now then review them and say you've given too many claims for the claimant? Why not the other way? You've given too many no claims for the... it just doesn't make any sense.
They can't, Judge Thomas, no matter who the powers that be are, whether they be people that are in favor of expanding protections or restricting protections, the independent judiciary that functions as the arbiters of these disputes is now chilled, is now placed in question by this statute.
What's the remedy for that?
I think the remedy for that particular provision, Judge Wolf, would be to declare that provision of this statute unconstitutional as a violation of the separation of powers. That would be my feeling about that.
But this is an executive branch agency. Would it also be your contention that a person who is injured on the job could take his claim to court on the grounds that he does not have a substitutionary remedy in the comp system?
Judge Wolf, if you read the respondent's brief, they seem to insinuate that to this court. That so what if we've eliminated large groups of workers from the workers' compensation system? If they lose, they can sue us. That's not the law in this state. What hasn't been changed is 287.1201, which is the exclusiveness clause in the Workers' Compensation Act. And this court has always broadly interpreted that particular statute. Exclusivity doesn't mean compensable. It means that it is colorably a claim to be brought under workers' compensation. The one question that I would like the respondents to answer when they come up here and argue is just when can this employee who's cut out of this workers' compensation system go to circuit court or go to civil court for a remedy? In 1926, when this law went into effect, that was the remedy. Workers could go to civil court. They had no bar in going to civil court, but they had contributory fault, which in effect limited recoveries. There was a bargain made, and that bargain has been upheld by this court for over 80 years. On this hand, the worker and the injured party gave up their right, guaranteed under our Constitution and the open court provision, to go to civil court for redress of a fundamental right that even Blackstone recognized, recompense for injury to a person or property. The worker gave up that right and also gave up their right to damages, to unlimited damages, punitive damages, and all the other things that the law would provide.
And to a jury trial.
And to a jury trial.
Which is constitutionally guaranteed.
In Which is constitutionally guaranteed.
Jury trials.
Oh, okay. Well, they gave up their right to access the civil court and the jury.
And jury trials.
And jury
no
trials.
Jury trials.
And damages. The employer got certainty. The employer got, okay, this remedy will be exclusive. You can't sue us anymore. In 1923, Associated Industries published an article where they said the insurance and the tort crisis in this state with workers suing employers is getting so catastrophic that we will no longer be able to get insurance in this state. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And they were talking about the tort system. Give us workers' comp, they said. So in effect, the legislature and the voters ratified the grand bargain, which lasted for 80 years. Minor adjustments, the legislature adjusted benefits, minor tweaks to the law. This court constantly expanded the scope of workers' compensation. Mr. Padberg argued this morning about co-employees covered by workers' compensation. Zug versus Oppenheimer covered by workers' compensation. The court constantly expanded the coverage of workers' compensation. In 2005, in the most draconian statute in this country, the legislature said, you know what? We're going to cut you out of this workers' compensation system. We're going to give you all kinds of fault-based defenses. And we're going to cut large amounts of people out of the workers' compensation system. But you know what? We're going to keep that line here that keeps you from going to court for a remedy.
Can the legislature pass a bill and say you have no, a worker cannot, in the Constitution they're protected, so that the legislature, let's say there was no workers' comp, could the legislature pass a law and say, or do people even pass an initiative petition saying the workers have no claim against the employer?
No. Under our Constitution, they could not, because we have our open course provision and our due process protections. You know, the purpose of the open course provision in our state constitution, and it was in our first state constitution, was to protect individuals who were injured, to protect their rights to access to a remedy. And that's what we're talking about here. Under this particular statute that has been passed, SB1, large amounts of workers, injured workers, either in whole or in part, will be deprived of any remedy.
But it's the parties are kind of arguing the opposite sides of what you might intuitively think, because opposing counsel says that, no, there is a separate remedy in court if you cannot sue under the workers' compensation system. And you say, no, there really is not. Would it, were the court to hold that there was an alternative tort remedy, would that satisfy your concerns for your clients, or is that not fully addressed?
If the court wants to indicate that there's an election of remedies, that an injured worker has the right to the workers' compensation system or at election,
I don't think that's what opposing counsel's arguing.
Or if the court wants to eliminate exclusivity. You know, the question I have, Judge Stiff, is both the amicus and the respondent state that in their brief, that, well, you know, the injured worker can still go to court. But they don't say when. And this particular statute, by the way, has bars that are not complete. I'll give you an example. You know, section, which I think is one of the more egregious sections, 287.120.4 is for post-injury termination. A worker who's hurt on the job, it has workers' compensation coverage, is entitled to medical, a month and a half later does something wrong on their job and gets fired, whether justifiably or not. Under this statute, that worker, the TT benefits, TTD benefits stop. The temporary benefits stop. What is that person supposed to do? How does that person get to civil court under this particular structure to recover for the lost income that they are now suffering as a result of this statute? You know, the complete bars are horrendous enough. The temporary bars and the presumptions go much too far. Every state, Your Honors, that has looked at the constitutionality of workers' compensation statutes, even when they were upheld, said the legislatures can go too far. If they go too far in disturbing this balance, this bargain, then the statute cannot stand. Every state that's looked at this has said that. In Missouri here, we have crossed that line.
You know, in other contexts, as somewhat rather controversially, the court has looked at whether or not if some provisions go too far, they can be severed from other provisions. Is it your argument that the statute has to stand or fall as a whole, Or is it your argument that if the court were to find that certain provisions went too far, then it would be appropriate for the court to look and see if they could be severed from the whole?
It is certainly appropriate for the court to examine a statute when it's challenged constitutionally with an eye towards preserving that part of the statute which it deems to be constitutional. It is our position that this statute, taken as a whole, with all these provisions put together, that if the court basically took everything out of this statute which is offensive to the open courts and due process provisions of Missouri Constitution, it'd be about 3 pages long. Okay, so our position is certainly it's the court's option to do that, but this particular statute is so bad. And by the way, Judge Stiff, if that's done, if the court decides that this statute cannot stand, we are not left without a workers' compensation statute. By the terms of this statute, which repealed the earlier workers' compensation statute, we just go back to the pre-existing workers' compensation statute that existed on August 27th of 2005. The state would not be left without workers'
compensation. We did that in trial.
We
did that in the Trout case.
Yes, you did that in the Trout case. And that, in effect, by the very terms of this legislation would happen here.
Your opponent says that this is legislative prerogative. Can you address that?
Judge Russell, it's all they have to defend what, even in their briefs, I think they are tacitly admitting is a very bad statute. They're saying this thing may stink, but the legislature can do it. And that's an argument that is a good argument. And for example, we talk a lot about rational basis in our brief and equal protection, but I'm not even talking about that because I think the first analysis is, does it violate due process and the open courts provision of the Missouri Constitution? The legislature should be given no deference when a statute they pass flies in the face of the open courts provision of the Constitution. This court in Kilmer addressed that when it stated that the open courts provision of this Constitution was put in place to protect the public from renegade legislature.
But we also looked at cases, the Deal case is a good example, when we dealt with the discrimination law. We said you cannot deny someone a jury trial. The legislature cannot pass legislation that can deny someone a jury trial. It's constitutionally protected under the Constitution 1820.
If there
yet somehow we've got this whole workers' comp system that denies people jury trials.
If there was one fundamental principle that this court has always upheld, is the right of citizens of this state to have access to a remedy when one of their fundamental rights is threatened, and that is exactly what SB 1 takes away from us.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the court. There's no fundamental right in play here, and to be very clear, the due process standard that applies is widely very deferential. The legislature must be deferred to unless it's enacted a statute that has no rational basis or no rational relationship to a legitimate state interest.
So could you just deny workers the right to file an action against the employer? The legislature, not you, the legislature, just pass a law and say, the economy of the state would be better off, it's good for business, the workers have no rights whatsoever against employers, period.
The legislature certainly could do away with the statutory right for injuries without fault if they wish. And that might be answering a slightly different question.
No, his question is even with fault.
Even with fault. With you know, I
could
think
they just leave no remedy at all?
Could they do away with a core?
And then it would be pro-business. It would be, you know, someone could say it's pro-business. Heck, everyone would come here because the employees would have no rights whatsoever.
I think that's a really interesting question, whether they could altogether do away with a core common law right. And I'm not confident one way or another whether they could. But I can tell you that here, what the legislature is doing is affecting the right to compensation for injuries without fault. And regardless of whether the legislature wishes to make the coverage this wide or this narrow, that's entirely separate from doing away with common law rights to recover for someone else's negligence.
So the open courts due process argument by your opponent bears no weight in your.
I think that it's largely off the mark.
Well, is it really your argument that if there is no workers' compensation remedy, that there is then the worker could go to court?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
Are you arguing that just if you don't fall within the definition of accident, or are you saying if at some point maybe you were drinking on the job or something else that prohibits you then recovering in work comp, then you can go to court at that point.
The workers' compensation system is substitutional. And to the extent that the system covers your claim, that your claim is compensable, then you have your comp remedy. If it's not compensable, if you're not covered, circuit court is your answer.
Now, when you say compensable, do you mean actually receive recovery, or theoretically it was compensable, but because you drank, you're barred from recovery? Or
because you drank, or because, you know, you blew your opportunity to present evidence.
Would that be a change from the prior law where had some reason why you were not entitled to recover, even though you fell within the definition of accident? Are you saying you could have gone into a court then previously?
It's not a change. Under the prior law, frankly, there haven't been a whole lot of lawsuits in civil court for work-related injuries because the comp system is just so broad.
Or is there any case that holds that?
Deckard, it's a Western District case from 2007, says the workers' compensation law bars common law lawsuits for only those damages covered by the law and for which compensation is made available under its provisions. Thus, an employee is free, despite the workers' compensation law, to bring suit at common law for wrongs not comprehended within the law. That law was on the books.
Does that mean, would that be interpreted to mean that if I am a worker, I bring my claim in workers' comp, I am denied recovery, then I have free avail of the court system for my dispute?
It probably depends on why you're denied recovery.
Right.
If the commission were to decide, for example, this is not a compensable claim, we don't have jurisdiction, then yes, I think it's fairly simple. You can go to circuit court to recover.
What if it's denied on one of the defenses that's created by the new statute?
I think that's a little more complicated. If there's a forfeiture, for example, a penalty that's imposed, for example, for drinking on the job,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a little more complicated. And I'd like to see a suit with real facts to flesh that out, one that makes its way through the system.
In terms of total bars like that, though, doesn't that essentially mean it's not compensable?
I think
even
that's
though
one
it's cast as a defense, it really is an exclusion by definition.
I agree, and I think that's an interpretation. If that's necessary to sustain the constitutionality of SB 1, then I suppose that's the interpretation that must be applied.
Well, let me ask you this: is some, for example, when they define what's covered, it seems to cut out, for example, a carpal tunnel syndrome or a hearing loss claim because it doesn't happen on a given day, a given shift. But if the worker has this injury that's acquired on the job, can she go to court? Or because under the common law system, she would have to show that it's somebody's fault.
Well,
so we've now got the remedy that was substitutionally created, it seems to me, remedies that common law may not have recognized, because the common law recognizes fault.
Exactly.
But you'd have to prove that carpal tunnel syndrome, for example, was the fault of the employer. So I don't know whether the fault system is broadly enough buttressed to say that, right?
Well, this court has recognized for decades that the workers' compensation system is entirely a creature of statute. Legislature's authority is plenary. That means that the legislature can decide who is compensated and for what. And I think under your example, that's the legislature is drawing lines. Now, repetitive injuries, they are specifically mentioned. Repetitive motion injuries still are covered. They're explicitly mentioned in SB 1, to be clear. The hearing loss, I think the decibel ranges were changed. I think that was a simple realignment of the levels to comport with modern national standards.
But I think what you're saying is if the legislature would have a right to more narrowly define those kinds of injuries which can be recovered for regardless of fault, as long as it then left those injuries that were no longer covered back to the original system, fault-based or not fault-based, whatever.
Precisely. In a sense, they're two separate things. They're separate concepts.
Let me try another hypothetical. Okay. Let's say you're on the job, you're a passenger in a car, on the job, going to a work site, and you're drinking. You're not driving the car, you're in the car, and you're drinking, and a tractor trailer runs into you and seriously injures you. Could you then just go to the civil court and say, well, I'm not covered in the workers' comp because I was drinking on the job, but yet my drinking on the job had no factor whatsoever on my injury. Could you just go into sort of court and say workers' comp has basically eliminated me?
Judge, I'm not entirely sure. That goes back a bit to the example that we were talking about. Is that an exclusion? Is that a penalty, you know, that operates as a forfeiture of your rights, you know, altogether? I don't know. I think that what the worker should do in that case is file the comp claim, see if the commission thinks that it has jurisdiction or not. If it doesn't, if the claim's not compensable, go to circuit court or dual file as a practical matter.
Pardon me. Can you give us an example of any claim that is excluded under the current version where was previously included and they could go to civil court?
Perhaps a worker who had an injury that was a substantial factor but not a prevailing factor.
So you think that if it doesn't meet the prevailing factor standard, they have a right to file a civil lawsuit?
Yes, I do.
Can you please address the issue Judge Teitelman asked Mr. Mandel about previously about the independence of the judicial arbiter and in light of the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court has said you look at the role you play, not what branch you're in, and when you perform a quasi-judicial function, you have to be independent. You can't, you're not performing it if you're not exercising independent judgment. And I read the dissent in Edwards, so that may not.
I'm not confident of the answer there. The administrative law judges do perform quasi-judicial functions. They're appointed by the division. Now they're subject to review by a commission. They can be removed by the governor. Their decisions aren't final. They are subject to review by the commission. If a person chooses not to have it reviewed by the commission, you have to go to circuit court and file it, I believe, to have it enforced as a judgment. I'm not sure that I see a challenge to the independence of the judiciary under these circumstances.
Well, of the judicial function that these judges are being, these administrative law judges are being given, where if the issue is that you look at their function, not in what branch they're in, which is what certainly in the federal courts is the approach taken.
Right. I understand, and I'm not sure that I have a good answer for that.
But don't we need to have an answer when we're addressing that challenge to the statute?
There is a separate substantive challenge to the administrative law judges. I don't remember which count it is, but it's later on in the petition. To be sure, I'm not sure that this is the proper context for that challenge to be raised. These are labor unions, trade associations that are challenging it. They don't even claim to represent administrative law judges. They claim to represent employees.
Well, who else would employees? Who else would bring the case?
An administrative law judge who is removed.
Well, why shouldn't the employee be able to bring this case as to the fairness of his or her adjudication of the claim?
I'm sorry, Judge, how should?
Why shouldn't an employee be able to raise this because it goes right to the fairness of the adjudication of their claim?
Well, I agree that they should be able to, but there's a well-worn administrative mechanism for employees to do that, and that is filing your claim before the ALJ and making your way through the commission. And in fact, at least a couple of the cases that are cited, the administrative level cases that are cited in my briefing, since briefing have now hit the Court of Appeals. There's a case in the Eastern District and there's a case in the Southern District.
So we're going to get those specific cases that challenge specific provisions of the new Act.
Yes, yeah. Yes. There is a case in the Eastern District right now, idiopathic injury. It's a seizure on the job case, and the employee is, I believe, received compensation. The employee was denied compensation and is making due process, equal protection, open courts, ADA challenges.
How could you in that individual case bring an issue about the independence of the arbiter, though, because you wouldn't know till later if they got fired for fining for you or you know, somebody else? I mean, you would have to have an awful lot of cases where people got inappropriate results before you would have any kind of statistical pattern.
Your Honor, I'd have to concede it would be better, you know, for I think it would be better for an ALJ to bring that claim.
And the idea, I assume, behind the workers' comp is of a simple, no-fault system, one, for the employer to predict its costs through insurance and the insurance companies, and two, for the employee to have an inexpensive way to pursue their claims and to come up to the Supreme Court of Missouri as an individual employee to challenge these things would be quite costly.
Well, Presumably so, Your Honor. But remember that SB 1, the workers' compensation balance, or the quid pro quo that the parties talked about in their brief, that's a political reality. It's not a judicial or a constitutional requirement. It's a political reality.
In fact, the businesses would have a similar claim if a new gang came to town and appointed judges whose evaluation was based on how well they did for the workers.
Yeah.
There's about 2.5 minutes left if you want.
Yes, I would like to.
Other counsel to speak.
To do that. Thank you.
May it please the Court. Thank you very much. I'm Mark Ellinger on behalf of the Amicus Associated Industries, National Federation of Independent Business and Associated Builders and Contractors. And, you know, Mr. Mandel was correct earlier when he said back in the 20s, Associated Industries was really one of the leading proponents to get a workers' compensation system because it viewed that the system was kind of out of whack and it needed to be adjusted. And you're going to hear again, very, very surprising, I agree with Mr. Mandel on another issue, which is the courts constantly changed and expanded the scope of the workers' compensation.
Well, the legislature initiated those changes, didn't
they? The legislature initiated and adopted some of those changes, and I think a great example of that gets back to the history of the workers' compensation law. You know, the accident requirement. We've heard a lot of discussion about that. Originally, there was an accident requirement, and it had been adopted by this court in 1943 in the Hussman case, and had gone forward until in 1983 when this court in the Wolfgar case changed the standard of accident. The legislature ultimately adopted the Supreme Court's decision in 1993. Now in 2005, the legislature, through a changing political landscape, through a changing business landscape, decided to reverse that. That's how the process, I think, is supposed to work, and that's the ultimate issue here. The General Assembly passes laws, courts interpret the laws, and then the General Assembly reacts to those interpretations.
But it is the Constitution that's above us and above the legislature that also has to be adhered to.
And you're correct, Judge. The Constitution has to always be adhered to.
Let me ask you this. Let's go back to a hypothetical. The worker who's drinking on the job and is being transported by another worker. And let's say the accident was entirely the fault of the driver, who's immune because of this is a workers' comp contract. Could the injured employee sue the employer in respondeat superior in circuit court without going to the workers' comp remedy? She says, look, I was drinking at the time this was going on, and so I do not have a remedy.
No, Judge, I don't think that's the case, because the way the statute is set up with respect to alcohol use, it has to be a proximate cause of the accident or the injury, and that's simply a rebuttable presumption. The fact that the worker was drinking at the time he was in the accident means nothing that more than in his workers' compensation case, he simply has to show that that alcohol was not a proximate cause of the accident. As a passenger, that would be a fairly simple standard to reach.
Do you agree with your co-counsel that the test on whether a common law court remedy is available to a worker is whether or not the injury claim was compensable in workers' comp?
I think I agree with what the response attorney said, and I think the Deckard case has the best statement of that. It has to be covered under the Workers' Compensation Act. In other words, it has to have occurred at work, and it has to be compensable. If it meets those two categories, it's a workers' compensation claim.
Okay, so I have to recover.
The claim has to be compensable.
Well,
it doesn't mean you will recover.
What do you mean by compensable?
It means that under the statutory scheme, you can.
I would have a chance of recovery.
You have the opportunity to recover.
You would look prior to the defenses. You would just
prior to the defenses. You have the opportunity
well,
to
why
recover.
Well, why wouldn't you look after the defenses if the defense is a complete bar?
Well, If you look at it after the defenses, it's the same as saying an injury. You make a claim that an injury occurred on the job. The employer says it didn't occur on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that kicks you out of workers' compensation. That's a defense. It's an absolute defense inside workers' compensation. It's a
jurisdictional
issue.
So then I have a fine.
Then you
claim
get to
in
go.
Court.
Then you get to go to circuit court, and that's ultimately the trade-off.
Or what about if I'm at work, and I take a drink, and it is a proximate cause, but not a prevailing cause.
Well,
then do I have access to courts for remedy, or am I completely barred?
First, it has to be the proximate cause.
Yeah.
And if it is not the proximate cause,
then
you have
mean?
A claim. Well, that's ultimately a determination that administrative law judges, and actually to take a step farther, the commission, Labor Industrial Relations Commission, makes a determination on it, and then that comes up through the court system. The Labor Industrial Relations Commissioners, that's the decision that gets appealed. It's not the administrative law judge's decision.
Sure.
So ultimately, they're the independent kind of quasi-judicial entity that acts there, and they do have independence.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court, respondent's attorneys referenced the Depper case. That was a defamation case and really had very little to do with the issues at hand here. The court's holding on exclusivity has always been, as it enunciated in specific language in Holder versus Ems Hotel, we do not understand the words provided for to mean compensated for. So in answer to your questions, Judge Price, this has nothing to do with whether the worker actually gets compensated. It's the exclusivity bars them. Judge Breckenridge asked a question about, can you give me a case where you know the person can sue or could have sued before? The answer, very simply, Judge Breckenridge, is no.
So the argument made that if work was not a prevailing cause but was only a substantial cause, they could sue, you disagree with?
I disagree with that strenuously, and I guarantee you any lawsuit that was filed under those grounds would be responded to by a motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction.
There are cases that fall between those two categories, prevailing and substantial, presumably, if the change meant anything.
The problem, Judge, that is that prevailing factor as defined in this act, okay, is actually a greater standard for recovery than proximate cause is in a civil case. Okay. You have to prove more now to recover on what ostensibly was a system designed to guarantee recovery than you do in a civil case.
So there would be cases that might fail now that might have won before, and I think the question was, could those then be brought in a tort suit if, in fact, they simply were not covered because they didn't come within the definition of accident because they were not work was not a prevailing factor?
You know, I have problems with the word could because the one question I asked respondents to answer, which really wasn't answered and which is implicit in your question, is when? And how about some of these partial defenses and bars? The other thing that I would like the court to look at when considering this under an open courts analysis is that we have a comparative fault system in this state. The drunk driver who's injured in an automobile accident may not recover in front of a jury, but that jury is going to measure the percentage of fault on the plaintiff versus the percentage of fault on a defendant, and we have a pure comparative fault state. This SB 1 from 2005 is a contributory negligence statute.
We didn't have comparative fault early on.
We did not. We had contributory negligence, and you know, there's some thinking, Judge Limbaugh, that maybe comparative fault has made the whole workers' compensation scheme unnecessary. I know there's been some articles written on that subject. I don't happen to agree. But you can't go back, march backwards into the 19th century by passing a statute that reimposes contributory negligence standards on our court, on our judicial system.
Couldn't the legislature pass a contributory negligence defense in tort action, modifying the common law?
I suppose they could, Judge Wolf, depending on the actual language and whether it whether this court or another court would interpret that as violating the access to the court. The analysis of the open courts provision in the Smothers case in Oregon, I think, is very indicative of how this court should approach this act. And this statute is so bad that it is our position that it cannot be salvaged.
Thank you, counsel. You.